Hi, it's Nick here. Thanks so much for your continued support of this daily podcast, which marches relentlessly towards 1,000 episodes. I think it's May the 13th, episode number 1,000. Probably ought to get around to organising a party of some sort. That's for another day. What's for every day is the Racing app, which is where you can see every single one of our episodes listed chronologically. You can spin back through them very easily, and you can get the Racing app's own abridged version of each daily podcast as well, though sometimes their idea of what are my best bits and mine might differ somewhat, but that's fine. We don't mind creative differences. What's open to no doubt and what is for absolutely every day is the US Racing Service. You know I love American horse racing. If you are outside the United States and want the very best US horse racing service, and I'm talking cards, I'm talking past performances, I'm talking replays, all at one click, all very fast, all available to you, incredibly comprehensive, this is the place you have to go. For your US racing needs, if you're based outside the US, look no further than the Racing app. You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing app, in partnership with FitzDares. Good morning, welcome to the show. Monday, March the 25th, cool grey day here in TW11. That was the weekend when Gay Waterhouse won her 8th Golden Slipper, courtesy of Lady of Camelot, when Brad Cox and Flavien Prat teamed up to victory in the Louisiana Derby, a key race on the road to the Kentucky Derby, with Catching Freedom. When, in the UK, at Doncaster, there were three jockeys who all had very notable weekends for different reasons. Sylvester D'Souza, back after a 10-month ban and back in the big-ish time, but it could get better still. Kieran Fallon with a wonderful ride on his comeback on Montasib for William Haggis, who'd also been on the score sheet with Art Connoisseur in Australia. And David Egan has made a bright start to his job with Ammo Racing as retained jockey to them. Stakes winners in the US, first Irish two-year-old race, now a Lincoln with Mr. Professor, a 33-1 shot. He tells me how he's feeling about life in a little while. What about the jumping? Well, we're in a quiet spell before it all gears up again at Fairy House at the weekend. And with that in mind, and with Aintree beyond that, and how many horses he might run in the Grand National, Willie Mullins is along. Could there even be hopes, outside hopes, of a British Jumps Trainers Championship for the Irish Maestro? He doesn't rule it out, put it that way. First, however, we must pay tribute to one of the most popular sprinters that has been trained on these shores for many a decade. Highfield Princess won 4 Group 1 races. She incurred a significant injury 2 weeks ago. She fought valiantly, but she lost her battle over the weekend. Great sadness for everybody at Highfield, her stables, her owner John Fairley and his family who followed her all over the world to great delight and great success, and with infectious enthusiasm. For John and Sean Quinn, now officially co-training, but partners very much in that training enterprise for some time, the sort of loss that it must be pretty hard to come to terms with. And we'll begin this episode by speaking to Sean, who collected his thoughts for me a little earlier today.
Yes, thank you, Nick. It's a pretty quiet place around the yard this morning, in truth, but As is the thing in racing and sport, you've got to keep going, put one foot in front of the other, and the lads and lasses are all in this morning and doing their bit. But I'd be lying if I said it wasn't quiet.
And this has been the most remarkable journey, and I can't imagine you could have conceived of a horse that could have taken you to these places in those circumstances. Not just the winning the Group Ones, but where she came from and where she went to and all the human involvement that went along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And she came from nowhere, really. She crept up on us all. It wasn't like she was a very expensive yearling purchase with a big reputation. Most of those horses that cost all that money often can't put one foot in front of another on a race course. But she sort of, as I say, crept up on us, came from nowhere, and then just kept improving.
Everybody knows what she everyone can read a form book, but not everyone lives with these horses day in, day out. So perhaps to sort of pay tribute to her properly, we ought to understand a little bit more about who she was and why she left such an impact on everybody.
Yeah, well, that's just it. She was a lovely animal to have around the place, and I suppose that the thing about her, she'd run through a brick wall for you. She'd do that on a track, of course, but she'd also do it at home. She'd try terribly hard every morning, and she was uncomplicated. She'd eat very well. She'd get turned out into a paddock after exercise, and she'd go out and she'd enjoy that, but she'd be sensible with it. You were never worried she'd do something stupid, or she was just thoroughly professional. I remember when she flew to the Breeders' Cup, I think with your brother's firm, and they were taking videos and putting them onto Instagram, and typical her, she led all of the UK contingent onto the plane. She was the first one up, and she was that kind of horse. If she was a human in wartime, she'd be the first one over the trenches.
And that is a wonderful way to remember her in many respects. I remember Jason Hart talking about how when she got fitter and readier for a race, you know, that aggression started to come out, that kind of determination, and not nasty aggression, but that sort of fierce element of her, which I guess made her the competitor that she was.
Yeah, it was evident. Even this year, I remember I was riding out a couple of weeks ago, and Willie DeWan, our travelling head man, was on her, and we were walking back from the gallops, and she got to the bottom of the gallop, and something just spooked her, and she spun around on a ninepence, and he did very well to stay on her, but she had that in her. You had to be on your guard and on your mettle all the time with her, because she just wasn't soft.
And she's been such a talismanic figure for the stable over the last few years, and as you say, everyone just feeling a little quiet and a little empty. You as trainers, I guess, now have to rally the troops, if you like, and sort of press forward. How do you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose when she got injured a fortnight ago, we were resigned to the fact her racing days were done. That was a bitter pill to swallow, but we had swallowed it. So then the hope was really that she'd just pull through for the next part of her life. So we'd come to terms with not having her as our flagship horse on the track, but I don't know, it'll take a little bit of getting over her not being around the place, but we've a good team, and you know, we've met with tragedy in the past, and you just find a way.
Sean, I wish you all the best. She leaves us with some truly, truly wonderful memories. Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks, Nick.
Sean Quinn there. David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, is with me this morning. David, Sean Quinn's line there: if she was human and if it was wartime, she'd be the first one over the trenches. My house, she'll be missed.
It was met with universal sadness among the racing community. We had the very worrying news 11 or 12 days ago that she had had that accident in her stable and she would not race again, but obviously they were very hopeful that she would make a full recovery and that she would become a broodmare herself. John Fairley, the former Channel 4 boss, bought Highfield Princess in utero himself, and it's very sad that we've lost Highfield Princess. And I say we because I think that we all felt that she was one of those public horses. We rejoiced in her triumphs. We sympathised in her defeats. And it's very, very sad. It's particularly raw, I think, in the case of passings, be they human or be they equine, when you still feel that there was so much more to enjoy. And this may not have been on the race course for Highfield Princess, but we would have loved seeing her progeny train and race. And it's desperately sad. And one more point that, again, you know, I'm often moaning on this podcast about the number of of the small number of stables that enjoy such success, flattened jumps. The exception to that is often the flat racing division, and Highfield Princess was emblematic of that. It's been an absolute pleasure to write and to broadcast and just to be at the race course and enjoy what she did over the last few years. And I'm desperately sorry that it's come to this end.
Now, in a few moments' time, I will be speaking to David Egan about his blistering start to the flat season in his new job as retained rider to Ammo Racing, which has yielded success in America, Ireland, and now in the UK with his Lincoln victory. But we must keep an eye, close eye, on the second leg of what used to be called the Spring Double, the Randox Grand National, which takes place on Saturday, April the 13th, and its Irish equivalent that takes place this Easter weekend. The Irish National is flanked by a number of really important Grade 1 races, the Honeysuckle Novices Hurdle, the Willow Warm Gold Cup. In both of those races, and in the Irish National, and at Aintree, it'll be no surprise that Willie Mullins is extremely well represented. We'll talk Aintree, we'll talk Ballyburn, we'll talk the British Trainers Championship in a few moments' time. But first of all, I'll let the Master of Glasutton spin you through his likely runners in the Grade 1 Honeysuckle Mares Novices Hurdle this weekend, which could include Jade DeGrugy.
I'll probably run all I can because it is a Grade 1. It's probably the only chance that these mares will have of ever running for this prize money with Grade 1 status. So if any could get in the first three, that'd be fantastic. But I imagine Fun. She looks one of the top ones there. Jade DeGrugy, the obvious one there, if she has recovered well. I think she's recovering nicely. She'll certainly be left in. And then, you know, we have mares that are good enough to be in the race. Whether they're good enough to win it or not is another thing. You know, Penny 100 is rated 133. She likes the track. Cute at Desaz, Friends, Iris Emery, probably Judy Cazalan is probably the ground will be too soft, but we'll see. Billy Cole Pagan, she might get a run there. It's a race to, then looking down the list again, Majestic Force, Henry de Bromhead. You know, there's a couple of really nice horse, Pastoral, Henry de Bromhead. He has a nice team. Nicky has a nice one in it, Paul Purry. You know, it's not going to be a walkover by any means.
The big novice chase, the Willow Warm Gold Cup, a Grade 1. The name that absolutely leaps off the page, obviously, is Gaelic Warrior. And I know Ferry has been talked of even before Cheltenham. Is it still a possibility that he turns up this weekend?
A possibility, but I think I'd rather just go to Punchestown with him. But we'll see. I think we've won it twice with Cheltenham horses. It is a Grade 1. We have Blood Destiny in there, who improved hugely for a change of tactics the last time, and Mr. Policeman down near the bottom there. Tactical Move, another nice horse, you know. So there's it's going to be a tough race too.
And what about Il Est Etant and Facile Vega? Are they going to wait for something else?
Facile will wait. Il Est Etant could go there, yeah. Yeah, he going out to 2.5 wouldn't be any problem to him.
What's the verdict on Facile Vega at the moment? Are you still head scratching, or are you getting closer to figuring out what he wants?
Probably looking at his pedigree, maybe he wants a longer trip. But I think he's just not right. I thought he did some of his best work the week before Cheltenham, but coming home from Cheltenham, he's definitely not right. So we'll see. I've got a lot of examining to do with him, and I still think he hasn't shown us his best, but maybe he won't. Maybe he's just he's a big horse, big unit, you know, though it's hard to keep those big horses right at times.
Let's talk about the Irish National, which for the money on offer, and I'd say this very, very advisedly and guardedly, but for the money on offer, looks a little more winnable than perhaps you might imagine. Is that fair?
Yes, Boyle Sports are tremendous sponsors. I mean, it's 270,000 first prize. We've a small team in this. We'll probably run maybe two or three. Manila Cocoon or Nick Rockett, maybe on the ropes. And if the bottom one gets in, we'll have one maybe might run that. Or Paul Marvel ran the other day, disappointing, so he won't run, I imagine. But it's, Nick Rocket loves the track, those. I think Manila Kakuna does too, but Nick Rocket has good form around this track. And he's a novice. And it fits the bill, I think, for the type of horse for the Eastern Monday Grand National in Ferryhouse.
Yeah, and you won it last year with Iron Maximus, and of course he's amongst the favourites for the Randox Grand National on Saturday the 13th at Aintree. Is he the captain of your team, do you think?
I imagine he is, but he's stablemate. We have Capadonna there, Iron Maximus. Statler might go there now because he didn't get a run in the cross country. Mr. Incredible, who ran a cracker in, where did he, the Utoxeter. Adamantly Chosen won well the other day. He's in the mix. Beating of the Waters definitely runs. And then, you know, Glenn Gooley might run, who ran a great race in the Thaestes.
Okay, so I make that seven, I think. So then,
yeah. that's probably right, I think.
Okay, that's it's a nice squad. Is it definitive, do you think, which one? I mean, obviously Mark Walsh, I assume, will be on Iron Maximus. Of the others, which one do you think Paul Townend would ride?
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
Okay, which one would you ride if you were him?
Would Mark not ride Capitano?
There you are. You did this to me last year. I remember this exact same conversation, and I went off. I scurried off and said to everyone, "This Capadonna, Willie really fancies him." And I'm not even sure I didn't tip him.
Yeah. But
in fact, I think I did tip him.
His runs were good, so I don't know what way Mark is leaning.
Okay.
To be honest.
Oh.
And I won't until I won't ask him until declaration time. He'll get every bit of information he can.
But you're obviously keeping the faith in Capadonna as a national project, because and arguably he's had a better preparation for the race this time than he did last year.
Yeah, but then go down the bottom. You look at Meeting of the Waters, Adamantly Chosen off their weights. Brian Hayes, I imagine, will ride Mr. Incredible. You know, you look for something down there, don't you? 10 stone 4, 10, or what? I'm not sure what the statistics for the National over the last sort of 10 or 12 years are, but imagine below 11 stone, and yeah, it seems to be the best thing.
Okay. In terms of the prize money for this race, obviously it's $500,000 to the winner, and there's a lot of plays money to pick up as well. Now, you're not that far behind in this British Trainers Championship. I won't have escaped your notice. You're about that much behind at the moment. I know you had a good go at it one year. Have you given it much thought in terms of trying to win it again?
Not really. If the National came our way, you'd certainly be in the mix. So that's all. And, you know, we don't usually have that many runners in entry. We tend to keep them for Punchestown. So I think by the time Dan and Paul get to entry, they could be another $250,000 ahead, which would make things difficult for us.
But say you got on the heels of them or even went in a little tiny bit in front or something after Aintree, would you then have a think about sending some horses to Ayr or Sandown to try and give it a crack?
Perth, we were in Perth.
Perth. Newton Abbott, I don't know.
You never know. Certainly you'd have to, you know, if that happened, a lot of ifs there.
Yeah,
you certainly would. You'd look at things differently, maybe then. Yeah,
yeah.
And owners would have to be happy to do it too, as well.
It's probably not lost on you. 50 Doom, 53, 54. Vincent O'Brien, the champion national hunt trainer in Britain, in addition to all his other insane achievements. And I got that strong sense from you the other day when you were talking about Ballyburn and maybe trying to emulate Dawn Run that, you know, history plays an important part in this game for you. It's nothing without context.
Yes, you know, I mean, I look at Ballydoyle, and they're always trying to get a triple crown horse.
You know, and I think it's nice to factor in those things if you have a horse that you think are good enough. But I haven't spoken to either Ronnie Bartlett or David Manassa about Ballyburn yet. That was only just something off the top of my head. And, you know, maybe they prefer going Nabbs Chasing, and which is the route you'd normally go. But he does look sort of a Faheen type individual, you know, bred and looks like a chaser, but yet he has the speed of a herder.
And the agility, crucially, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, you know, he had that something else ability, I think.
I guess if you called up Ronnie Bartlett and David Manassa and said, look, I fancy winning the Champion Hurdle next year and then maybe the Gold Cup a couple of years after that, I think you'd probably get buy-in.
Yeah, they'd probably ring me and say, what the hell are you talking about? But anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
Willie Mullins there. I think I counted 7 likely Grand National runners. So there'll be plenty of people thinking, right, that might just give me a chance if he doesn't run all the ones he's got currently entered to sneak in the bottom of the now reduced field of 34. David Yates is with me. David, I suppose the idea that if he wins the Grand National, we could get an interesting battle for the Trainers' Championship between not just Skelton and Nichols, but also Mullins is something to enliven those final weeks of the season.
Yeah, and I think we had this at Sandown 2 or 3 years ago, didn't we, with Willie Mullins, where it seemed a possibility that he could do it. At the time, correct me if I'm wrong, my impression is that, you know, it's something that he would like to have done, but that he wasn't, you know, absolutely bent on doing. That's my recollection of it. As you say, if he wins the National, then he's certainly a front runner in more ways than one.
But at the moment, it's Skelton 2,566,293. Nichols is about 59,000 behind him, and Mullins is only just shy of 2 million.
Of the two that are currently split, as you say, by that just less than 60 grand, I think this year I'd probably go with Nichols to retain his title. That'd be what number? That'd be number 15, wouldn't it? That'd be equal to his rival Martin Pyatt.
Yes, and that will not be lost on him. It'd be a certain irony, wouldn't there, if in a year where it seemed a foregone conclusion for most of the season that he would equal Martin Pipe, that it should be his own pupil, if you like, Dan Skelton, that should thwart him.
Yes, indeed, his own protege. If Dan Skelton were to win and then kick on from there and perhaps retain it, that really would make it a sort of bittersweet for poor Nichols, wouldn't it? His own protege going on. I think the trainer that we really think of as being forged in poor Nichols' own image to go on and deprive him of that record-equalling 15th championship, which, as you say, I mean, Nichols might not actually say publicly that that's not something that is of significance to him, but I think we all know that it would be.
Yeah, and I think you can only guarantee one thing, that history's not going to repeat itself. Paul Nichols is not going to ring up the opening show on Saturday morning of Bet365 Gold Cup Day and announce his retirement if Dan Skelton has an unassailable lead.
Yes, I think that's a fair bet. Fond memories.
And of course, Nichols himself, now without a runner in the Randox Grand National, because 3 under 3 5 will wait for Sandown at the end of the season. And that means there are just 5 British trained horses who would currently get in if all the 34 top ones stood their ground. Now, obviously, there'd be a couple bubbling under at the bottom, but it's still going to be a very thin representation. What do you make of that call as regards 3 under 3 5?
Well, interestingly, I think that to begin with, talking to Paul Nichols, you know, sort of in a huddle and probably not for quotation a little while ago, he said, we'll see about 3 under 3 5. I'm not mad about the idea of going for the Grand National with him. And then I think about 2 to 3 weeks ago, Max McNeil spoke to the press and said, you know, yeah, I'm really keen to go to Aintree. Paul and I are going to have lunch and we'll make a plan from there. And It seems, perhaps not for the first time, Paul Nicholls has won that particular battle of wills. The quote to Lewis Porteous in the Racing Post from Max McNeil is, "We've got to put the horse first." And when Paul said we'd win the bet 365 off top weight, I told him that's what we've got to do then. So plenty of confidence from Paul Nicholls that 300 through 5 can triumph at Sandown. But as you say, it weakens an already pretty depleted home challenge for the Randox Grand National on April the 13th, because six has now become five.
Well, the Randox Grand National Festival is still 2.5 weeks away and still time to make some plans to enjoy everything that Aintree has to offer. If you would like to go to Aintree, if you would like to go to Aintree and lunch in style, if you'd like to go to Aintree lunch in style and raise money for one of racing's most important and prominent charities, you can do all three. And not for a king's ransom either. Here to tell me more is Claire Kingston from Racing Welfare. Claire, what's happening?
Morning, Nick. So we have a annual lunch on the first day of the Randox Grand National Festival. So the Thursday, we get an amazing rate, which we pass on to everybody for the lunch. Car parking, champagne and canapes, two-course lunch with wine, afternoon tea, and an amazing card of racing, all for £200 per person. I mean, you haven't got a reason not to come, have you?
And you're raising really important money for, as I said, one of racing's most prominent and crucial charities. Just give us a flavour of some of the work that you're undertaking at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a charity, obviously, we rely solely on donations and fundraising and actually need to raise more than £3 million every year to support the workforce behind the racing that everybody enjoys. We do lots of different things to support them, from providing grants to help alleviate financial burdens of the cost of living, counselling for mental health challenges, physio following an injury or an accident, careers advice. There's lots of ways that we sort of work away in the background.
And just to clarify, if you want to come to Aintree, it is a special discounted rate for Racehorse Owners Association members.
Yeah, exactly. A discounted rate of £200, and that's right up to the day before if we've still got space. But I wouldn't recommend that. Get on and do it if you want to come. We are nearly at our sold out status, so it's great. But yeah, £200 for ROA members because of the support and that ROA give us in partnership with the charity.
racingwelfare.co.uk/events if you want to go to Aintree in style. Talk about the racing, David, from the weekend. And if people sometimes worry that the flat season starts with a whimper, I feel this year it started with a series of results that could well be of significance, even if they might not be remembered for the races themselves. Kieran Fallon, Sylvester D'Souza, David Egan, three riders all in their very different ways, making an impression that could well set a marker for the rest of this season.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, Nick, because we were about the start of the flat season, because obviously for as long as I've been in the game, particularly with the advent of all-weather racing from 1989 onwards, people have said, like, what are we going to do about the start of the flat season? Leave it until the Craven, etc., etc. Now, just talking to friends and colleagues in the run-up to the Lincoln, we were remarking it looks a good race this year, a really interesting race. It's not just a sort of run-of-the-mill mile handicap. And as you say, the whole card served up much of interest. The mile was run on the Saturday this year. I'm not sure if that's it certainly hasn't always been the case in the past. It used to be run on the Sunday. And very interesting. Let's take David Egan first. I think it's right to start with him. He is, I think, an extremely talented, very likeable young jockey who's just started for Ammo Racing, Keir Jarabchan. Now, I don't want to be disrespectful or over red top tabloid about this, but we know that is a job that, you know, you're not going to have it for life. It seems that way if we read the form book. And David Egan has made a really good start, successful in Ireland last at the start of the week, and also with Mr. Professor in the Lincoln, a horse trained by Dominic French Davis, a trainer who's very much part of the setup for Ammo Racing. And what a wonderful way to start. This is a very much a cherished prize of flat racing, and Keir Jarabchan now has that in his trophy cabinet. So an excellent start for David Egan with Kieran Fallon.
Dave, what price would you lay me David Egan is still in this role a year from now?
My word, what a question. I think I would probably I'd probably make him about a 4 to 6 shot, I would say, to be in the job.
I was hoping for something a bit more generous than that. Oh no, I'd take 4 to 6. I'd take 4 to 6. I think this is going to work.
I don't think it's fair to describe that situation as a revolving door, although I probably have to, you know, someone will probably find a clip of me saying that in the past. But I think that David Egan comes to this job with perhaps a little bit more experience at the top level than Ross Orion did at the time. And I think certainly more than Kevin Stott did at the time. He's a classic winning rider. He's still young. But I think that he's got an awful lot more to give. I personally, as a, you know, so people probably think that I'm trying to crawl to him by saying this, but I think he's an exceptionally good person to deal with. I think that was shown when he was jocked off Mishriff by Frankie Dettori in the King George a couple of years ago. Lots of jockeys would just stay in the weighing room and say, you know, we've all done this drill a million times. You go to the weighing room security guys and say, oh, hello, David Yates, Daily Mirror. Could I speak to David Egan, please? And they come back and say, he's still in the sauna. And you know perfectly well that you're not going to get a word with David Egan about losing the ride aboard Mishriff. He came out, he spoke to the cameras, he said exactly the right things, that you know, he took that decision in good faith and in good parts. He wished the horse and Frankie Dettori well, and he expressed the wish that his time would come. Well, his time is coming, and I like my dealings with him, and I think I was going to say to you 4 to 5, but then I thought, well, I'll just shorten it slightly in case Lucky Francis is having a few quid on. Not that we're wishing to promote unlicensed gambling. I should say that. But I think it'll go pretty well. Of course, there'll be a bump in the road. There's a bump in the road in every relationship, but I think he's significantly more likely than not to be in the same job in a year's time.
Well, let's get it in his own words. We've done the pontificating. Here's how David Egan feels about life at the moment.
Yeah, I'm feeling comfortable, I think, and enjoying myself, which is very important when you start a new job. Obviously, it's new surroundings and new team to work with, but things have, as you said, have gotten off to a great start, and long may it continue.
Was that Lincoln winner a lovely surprise, or were you getting vibes from Dominic French Davis and his team that they'd managed to sweeten the horse up?
They obviously fancied the horse and he was good enough to take his chance, but obviously he only just got in the Lincoln off a low weight. If you said you strongly fancied him at 33-1, fair play, but looking at his form, it was probably hard to fancy him, but he was a horse who was fit on the day, relished the ground, and he's obviously been sweetened up by the team. And it was great to get a Lincoln's a very prestigious race, starts off the season, and hopefully for us, start as we mean to go on.
Now, early two-year-olds have been a mark of Ammo Racing success over the last few seasons. Arizona Blaze won the first two-year-old race at the Curra. Lady Dorchester's a heavy favourite tonight at Newcastle. You had the favourite in the Brocklesby as well. How numerically strong are you going to be through the next 2 or 3 weeks? Are you going to be on a favourite in just about every two-year-old race?
I think that's just more so the respect Ammo Racing has in regards to possibly bookmakers pricing up races, because their history has proved that they do very well this time of year with their two-year-olds. Numerically, we've got a lot of them, so it's more of a case of a horse wouldn't be running if we didn't think they were ready, and we've got so many that each two-year-old race almost have one in every 2 year old race. So yeah, I'm sure we'll have a strong hand coming out in the next couple of weeks for sure.
Okay. What was the decisive factor in you taking this role? Why did you think it would suit you now at this point in your career?
It was a tremendous opportunity to get. They've got so many good horses, both juveniles coming through, as everyone knows, every year, but also they're sort of classic contenders, and they're all the horses. Obviously, King of Steel was one of the best middle distance horses, you could say, in Europe, and obviously him staying on as a four-year-old with the sheer size of him, you'd only say he'd strengthen up and improve, and I'm very excited to take the new role, yeah. Mm.
And when are we likely to see King of Steel, and have you been riding him at all?
I haven't actually sat on him. I went into Rogers the other day and saw Raul de Silva go up the gallops on him, but I'm sure I'll get a sit on him before he runs. But he's in his routine, and I know Roger said something to the press about there's a couple of options for him, and the main target was the Prince of Wales, so I'm told. So it's very exciting stuff.
And for you, on a day-to-day basis, how much of sort of field work do you have to do going out and riding all the two-year-olds at home?
Yeah, it's so when I was in America, I actually flew back for a week or two to go down to Mullingar to their sort of pre-training center and sat on a lot of the two-year-olds. I've got someone who works with me and keeping my notes of all the horses I ride, because to be honest, you ride that many, you would forget little things about certain horses. So I'm glad I've got that to fall back on. Looking back at, I might have ridden a horse maybe 3 months ago, and if I thought something back then, normally things don't change. So I'm glad to have that in the back of my pocket.
All right, continuing our build-up now to the Dubai World Cup this weekend, meeting some of those people who have made and shaped racing in the Emirate. Laura King picks up the story in episode 3.
Satish Seymour was one of the very first expat trainers in Dubai. He established himself at the beautiful Zabil Stables in the early 90s, arriving before the old Nadal Sheba racetrack was even built.
1990, I was invited to Dubai in October. I met His Highness. We sat on the sand dune, and that was my interview, my job interview, I should say. What His Highness said in those 20 minutes, I will never get over, I cannot get over it ever, that all came true. How can a person predict the future like that? That really, really boggles my mind.
So what did he say?
Well, he called everything what's already happening and more. He said it in his own way of talking, that the world of racing will come here to see our racing. We'll have one of the biggest racing events here.
Seymour went on to become one of the most successful trainers in UAE history, winning 6 championships and Group 1s with Reynaldo the Wizard and North America.
As a very close to heart, close to everything, and my involvement would always be Reynaldo the Wizard. I have known him since he was a yearling. Late Sheikh Rashid bought him as a yearling. He was trained in the United States, then he came back here, and then he went back. And then, of course, what his stardom came in Dubai. And he's the horse which was the favorite of the yard. And he'd been with us for the longest period. He was a character, always 2 stalls behind my office back window. I would always, his timing of the time he wanted his apple, I could see his silent nickering and all, you know, those kind of things. Those kind of horses always stay with you. Although there's been few others who had some good stories like North America and everything.
Now retired from training, Having handed over to longtime assistant and nephew Bhupat, Satish has plenty of time to pontificate on the future of racing in Dubai.
My wish would be to have Saudi, Qatar, Bahrain join Dubai, and this would become the hub of racing of the world, not just monetarily, but everything else. And I'm glad to say, just when I've decided to quit, it's happening, and that puts a smile on my face. And that was always kind of my internal dream, that this region would, because all the efforts of His Highness, what he put his heart and soul, this complements everything. Otherwise, just one part of this part of the world is not good enough. Racing is a very traditional, very worldwide thing, and I'm so happy that when I went to Saudi a couple of times to see all that, and hopefully it'll catch on better.
He may be retired from training, but you sense Satish Seemar isn't done quite yet.
And nor are we. Laura King there with a profile of Satish Seemar. Laura will be back tomorrow. Well, you know, here on the podcast, we like to showcase the best of the horse in art. And we're doing so again today because there's a new exhibition opening to the public at the Osborne Studio Gallery on Wednesday. There'll be a private view tomorrow, Tuesday. But to the public, Wednesday the 27th is the opening day, and it's entitled Carousel. The artist is Georgia Blakey, and she joins me now. Georgia, tell me what's inspired you.
Good morning, Nick. Well, horse racing has its own very unique language, and I wanted to play on that. I see horses as galloping silhouettes, and they're just filled with our hopes and dreams, and the hopes and dreams of all of the connections involved, from the jockeys to the trainers to the punters. And I wanted to really play around with what's in a name. Desert Orchid. I decided to make a horse filled with paper orchids with Richard Dunwoody on board, made out of mother of pearl. A lot of people bet on a horse because of the name. They don't look at the form. So they might go, well, Desert Orchid, my mum used to love orchids. I'll have £5 each way on that. So that's where it all came from.
In the foreword to your exhibition, which was penned by John Maxey, it says, you're continuing a great tradition of humour and satire in art, stretching from Hogarth in the 18th century to Banksy in the 21st. He's done you proud there, hasn't he?
He really has. But, you know, John's actually been quite helpful as I've been working on this, because I've known John for about 20 years. I think he does get it, because painting a horse, there's so much more under the skin, and there is a lot of humour in the sport, you know, natural rivalry as well, and good old-fashioned, you know, ribbing. For example, in my picture, Connections, I've made the horse out of all of the tube and train lines in this country. And on the jockey's jodhpurs, I've got parts suspended because we know how naughty they can be. And I've got some of the new tube lines that Sadiq Khan came up with, you know, for example, Suffragette. I've stuck that under the neck of the horse.
It's really innovative and fascinating work. Is this a measure of how you like to approach your work, whether you're painting horses or not? Is this very much your style?
I think it's becoming my style. I must have done normal, as you would call them, portraits of horses and dogs for, you know, gosh, 30 years. And there comes a point where, well, I could do you a lovely portrait of your racehorse standing in a field, looking exactly like your racehorse standing in a field. But let's discover what's under the skin of the horse. And as I have learned so much about equestrian anatomy, I realized that you can make, you know, a horse still look exactly like the owner's horse, but incorporate some of the owner's passions into the horse. So in a way, I'm weaving a tapestry. So I can take the racing program or a page from the Racing Post about their horse, for example, cut out the text and weave it into the bones and the skin of that animal. And that's a great tradition in portraiture. You used to signify the importance or the passions of the sitter or the owner with a collection of books, perhaps sitting behind, or a signet ring or something like that. But I like to actually put that into the subject.
George's exhibition, Carousel, is available to view at the Osborne Studio Gallery on Mottcombe Street from Wednesday the 27th. Georgia, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, that's my tip. Here's David Yates's for today.
We're going to Newcastle for the 5:30 race today, and it's Asgard's Captain, a horse who's a little bit shorter this morning than he was yesterday. Dylan Cunha, of course, won the Brocklesby Stakes at Doncaster on Saturday, a trainer who I'm sure is going to continue flourishing in 2024. He's got the top weight here, Asgard's Captain, who's on a hat trick, and I think he can rack up the threesome here. The 5:30 race at Newcastle, selection is number one, Asgard's Captain.
David, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Monday, March the 25th. Back to do it all over again tomorrow. Bye for now. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.